Hi, I'm Kathy Forstey, music director at Casey Cafe Radio. We're very happy to have award-winning singer, songwriter, and musician Hallie Hammer as an artist on Casey Cafe Radio. Her newest album, Eclectic Circus, has become a favorite among Casey Cafe Radio listeners. Hallie uses her talents in many different venues and genres, and the recording of her latest CD is just another example of her varied talent in songwriting and singing. Thanks so much, Hallie, for taking the time to talk with me today here on Casey Cafe Radio.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Hi.
Hi. We met back in October at the Far West Conference in Oakland,
right.
California.
Mm-hmm.
What have you been up to since then?
Well, I've been playing a lot. I'm actually recording a new CD, so I'm working on that. And I do a lot of activities in the Bay Area here besides music. I worked on saving the Berkeley Post Office, which is now saved. And I play with a group called Acapella. And we play every Monday at what's called the Tax the Rich Rally. It gives information to people about different aspects of what's going on in the government and in the world and locally as well. And we're the music for that every week. It's been going on now for 4 years.
What's the makeup of that band? Is it a vocal group or do you play instruments?
Yeah, it's vocal, but we also have guitars.
Mm-hmm.
So I always have my guitar there. Nancy Schimmel is usually vocal. She's Malvina Reynolds' daughter. She plays with us. Bonnie Lockhart comes when she can. She's the person who wrote the song, I don't know if you know, Who Are the Witches? And different people show up different times, but we all have a lot of fun and make a point.
Yeah. So you guys like have certain issues that the group of you decide are important to you and you go out together, or is one of you say, hey, there's something happening over here, we need to go do this?
Well, actually, we get a lot of requests from people to come and play for their events or rallies or marches. We've done a lot of rallies for 350.org for the climate change. In fact, we have songbooks online at acapella.org, and people can download them. There's a No Fossils Fuel book. There's a Black Lives Matter songbook. And so people can start their own acapella groups and sing for important issues.
Well, that's great. So you're very politically active. What kind of issues are the most important to you?
I think the climate. There's so much going on right now. I mean, everywhere any of my friends live as well as where I am, the climate is just different than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's too cold. And, you know, people say global warming, but it's really climate change because some places are colder and some places are warmer. We've been dealing with the drought here in California. Luckily, this year we've been getting some rain. But it's no matter how much rain we get, it's still not going to offset the amount of drought we've had in the past 7 years, actually.
Right. Yeah. It's been very dry there for a very long time.
Yeah.
And just a little bit of rain's not going to change that.
Right. And then I also do things with my family and friends. And I have jams at my house the first Sunday of every month, and people come over and we play music. We just go around in a circle, and everybody gets to choose a song. So very eclectic circus kind of group of people, you know, different people play different stuff. We have a lot of different kind of instruments, and depending on when it is, you know, sometimes we have a group of 10 and sometimes we have a group of 50.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the musical makeup of that? I mean, is it mostly guitar players, or you have like...
A lot of guitars. I play electric bass also, so I take out the bass for that because we have enough guitars. And we have sometimes banjos, we have mandolins, we have accordions sometimes, we have flutes. I have piano, so sometimes we have piano players come over and play. And I have a whole table full of percussion instruments, so we use those.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a really good time.
Yeah. In fact, I'm a retired special ed teacher, and I'm still working one day a week at the high school. And I was talking to the people I work with, and one of them says, well, it just seems like all you do is, like, you play music with your friends, and you play music, and I said, yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's not a bad way to be, is it?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. So do you think since you've done so many things politically, do you think it's important for musicians to be politically active?
I think that it's important for people to be politically active if that's their bent. I don't tell people what to do, But I do think it's really important. And even if people aren't involved in the big picture political scene, it's important for them to be active in their own neighborhoods and in their, you know, in their communities, doing things to help better their communities.
I almost, you know, personally, I kind of think it's more important to be active in your own community because you can have a lot bigger voice and make bigger changes there than you can nationally. You know, nationally,
right.
It's kind
you
of
know,
a... out of your hands.
Mm-hmm. And I've run into people who say, well, I'm not going to vote because I don't believe in it. And I say, well, you know, even if you don't want to vote for the large elections, register to vote and vote locally for the people who are running for your city council, for your mayor, you know, mm-hmm. for local issues, for local initiatives that are going to matter to you as well as to your community.
Right. Yeah. That's the way to make real change, I think, is start locally.
Yeah, you send out little ripples and they get bigger.
Right, exactly. You talked about playing bass a few moments ago. You also play in a band called Jump In.
Yeah, we call our band Jump In, and our trademark is folk and oldies. We play folk and oldies, don't say it too fast.
Right. Yeah, don't say that too fast or you get in trouble. I won't say it too fast on the radio.
And that band is not political at all. That band we play, you know, 60s, 70s. I mean, we play Kingston Trio stuff, too.
Mm.
We play a lot of older music and have fun.
Mm-hmm. And can you give me an example of one of the songs you do with another group of yours called the Reese Sisters? What do they do?
Oh, yeah, that group is political parody.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we have a bunch of videos up on YouTube of songs that we've done. We have, you know, songs like the Banker's song, which goes to, and you don't know me, except it's, and you still owe me.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a song out to the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe called the Candidate Song, which is the Donald and the Dr. and Demented Cruz.
That's great.
Our friend Bernie Gilbert writes a lot of the parodies for that. And he's quite brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And where do you guys usually perform that stuff other than up on YouTube?
Well, we play sometimes house concerts. There's a venue here in Berkeley called Redwood Gardens, and it's in a senior and disabled housing place, but we have a couple of friends who rent out the front room. You know, they just get the room and you can have concerts in there. There are concerts at a place called Art House. There are some venues around the Monkey House,
mm-hmm.
different places that there are places to play here in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm. And you said that people can find that up on YouTube?
Yeah, you can find it. If you look at the Resistors, they're up on YouTube. If you put my name in, you'll find that. A few years back, I did a Sing Out for Earth Day video, which is a 15-minute video of 33 groups all around the country, and actually we had some in Spain also and one in Costa Rica, singing This Land Is Your Land on Earth Day at the same exact time, which meant we started at noon here and 3 p.m. in New York and everywhere else in between. And I asked people to sing in the key of D.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'd be able to put it together. And it's a 15-minute video called Sing Out for Earth Day. And we're all singing This Land Is Your Land.
Yeah, I think I was part of that.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
That's cool.
I think I was in Warrensburg, Missouri, and they did is it 350 that was part of that?
Well, different places had different groups that put it on.
Yeah, and I was part of that, and we did This Land Is Your Land, and then I did a song that I wrote that's
uh-huh.
sort of, you know, about Mother Nature, about the planet Earth.
Yeah.
And then there's another performer who is he's an Elvis impersonator, but he does environmental songs
mm-hmm.
as an Elvis impersonator. So that, it was a very interesting show that we did.
That sounds like fun, yeah.
It was.
Yeah, and Acapella also does parodies. The reason we do that is so that people can easily sing along. We do stuff to familiar songs so that it's easy to follow.
Right. That's a lot of fun. What do you think it is that in your background that made you become so politically aware and get involved like this?
Well, I really wasn't politically aware in high school. I was Beatle aware in high school. I was Rolling Stones aware in high school. In fact, it's funny because people say, oh, well, you were listening to Joan Baez and Pete Seeger. And I said, yeah, and the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and the Animals. But when I got to college, I guess it was in my sophomore year, the Vietnam War was going on, and some friends asked me, did I want to go to Central Park for this rally? And Peter, Paul, and Mary were playing, different groups were playing, and I went more for the music than I did for the politics. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, in between the music, there were all these people talking and saying things that really were important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what radicalized me, was going to hear the music but listening to the words.
Right, yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So you were raised in New York.
Yeah.
What part of New York are you from?
Originally the Bronx, and then when I graduated sixth grade, we moved to Long Island. I was in South Hempstead, and then I was all over the city for a while. The last 8 years I was in New York, I was in the New Paltz, Kingston area in a little town called Rosendale, and then moved out here end of 84.
And are you from a musical family?
You know, my mom always sang, but none of my family played instruments. My grandfather used to sing, and, you know, for war bonds during World War II, he used to go out and sing. And he was the one that was musically bent in the family, I'd say. My mother and father were always singing, and especially my mother, and she'd sing me a song before she went to sleep, you know, before I went to sleep at night. She always had the record player on. People say, what did your mother play? I said, the record player.
Mm-hmm.
And she had an amazing, you know, range of these 78 records, everything from Al Jolson and the Andrews Sisters to the big bands, to the show tunes, to the pop music that was out at that time. Mm-hmm. And luckily for me, I got to hear them all.
My earliest memory is my parents had a huge 78 collection because my parents were older. My mom was like 40 when she had me, and my dad was 46. They had this really big, large 78 collection, and my earliest memory, I must have been like 2 or 3 years old, I was carrying the 78 of Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy over to the stereo to play it, and I dropped it and broke it.
Oh.
And I remember being heartbroken from doing that.
I chipped the end off the anniversary waltz one time, and I was heartbroken for that. That was when I was about 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we danced on the night that we met.
Was it Al Jolson's version, or who's?
Yeah, Al Jolson. I still have a lot of those old 78s. I don't really play them much. I actually found in an antique store here an old crank record player that plays 78s.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that with those needles that you replace. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a special sound to them.
Yeah. You're never quite sure of the pitch either because you're cranking that one.
Exactly. So you never know if they're singing too fast or too slow.
Right.
So at what point did you start playing an instrument then?
Well, when I was 9 years old, I wanted to take piano lessons and I wanted to join the Girl Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have a lot of money. We were in the Bronx, and my mom said, you know, you need to pick one. I can't afford both, because even with Girl Scouts, you had to buy uniforms and stuff. And I chose piano. And I still remember my first music lesson. I went to Mr. and Mrs. Vertzi's Bronx Academy of Music. It was one flight up, and they put me in front of the piano and showed me CD, 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 C.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so blown away by the fact that I could look at a piece of paper and see a note. I still remember the feeling, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I could know. And I sat there, and you got a half-hour lesson and an hour a week of practice time, and they had to come in and tell me my time was up because I was just sitting there playing CD, 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 C, and I was absolute epiphany at 9 years old.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
At what point did you take up the guitar?
When I was about 15, when the Beatles came out, because by that time we'd moved to Long Island, and I had a music teacher that wasn't as good as Mrs. Vertzi, I must say that, and I wasn't practicing much. I was 13 years old. I didn't really care. So he'd come in, and he'd yell at my mother that I wasn't practicing, and he'd yell at me, and my mother would yell because he was yelling at her, and I stopped playing because everybody was yelling. And then I picked up the guitar because nobody was going to care if I played it or not, and the Beatles were all playing it, and it was cool. And my best friend Marlena and I were, practicing a little bit on these guitars that we got. And it sat in the corner for a couple of months, and then I take it out and play it. But I really got serious about playing it when I got to college, and a friend of mine was selling a really nice little Gibson guitar, and I got that, and that's when I really started taking it seriously.
What was that first guitar? What kind was that?
It was a Gibson B-25.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you still have it?
No, it got lost in a fire.
Oh.
I had everything. In fact, when I moved out to California, I took like 300 records. I took everything that meant anything, moved into this house, and then about a year and a half later, the house burned down and took everything with it.
Mm.
So it gives you a different perspective on how important things are as opposed to everybody in the house and the animals all got out alive. So
yeah, I can relate. The house I grew up in when I was in college burned down. I lost all of my instruments, and we actually lost our pets too in the fire. So it was very sad. But anyway, on a happier note, I'm curious, like back in the 60s, there weren't a lot of women that were in rock bands back in those days. Why do you think that you as a female gravitated toward that style of music?
Well, I always listened to rock and roll stuff. And actually, the first band I was in, which was called Love's Labor Lost, I used to hang around at school and just sing with people. I didn't really play much with them. I played kazoo sometimes, but I really wasn't playing my guitar because I wasn't that good at that point. And this guy, Ronnie Bell, who I'm still friends with, he lives in Syracuse, New York, came over and asked me if I wanted to be in a band. They had somebody was getting drafted and leaving the group, and they needed another singer, and I joined in with them. We did like really intricate harmonies. We were a trio.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also played as a band with a lead guitar player, Paul Feuerstein, who I'm still friends with. He's in Lowell, Massachusetts, and a drummer and different things. We went up to Decca Records and made a demo there, and the guys didn't like the deal that they were offering, so we never went anywhere with that, but it was a really good group.
Mm-hmm.
Love, Labor Lost, yeah. We could have been a contender.
About what year was that?
That was 1969.
69.
Yeah.
So that was when you were in college still?
Yeah.
Where were you going to college at?
Queens College in New York City.
Okay.
In fact, the guy who left the group was a tall, skinny guy, and they all had these matching Nehru shirts. They were really nice ones, so I took his shirt, and it became a mini skirt.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
So would you call yourself a hippie then, back then?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was total hippie. In fact, I still call myself a hippie. I haven't lost my values or... You know, I call myself a responsible hippie.
So at what point did you take this love of music and harmonizing and stuff and start writing your own material?
When I was in college, you know, my first efforts were, you know, flowery songs that didn't make a lot of sense. And then I remember going out on a date with some guy and not really talking very much, going somewhere, you know, having sex and going home and writing this song about how he didn't really know me or see me, you know. And that was probably the first good song I wrote.
Yeah. You're kind of a feminist then.
Yeah, and then going into my parents' room because it was a commuter college and I was staying there and playing them the song. Which they didn't really comment on the topic, but it was interesting that I didn't have any boundaries where I thought I couldn't play it for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must have very supportive parents then.
Yeah, my mother, especially with music. I mean, if there was anything, I mean, all I had to tell her was that I was going to sing with some band and she'd let them practice in the basement with me.
Mm.
She really liked the fact that I was playing music. My mother was... an artist who never was able to, she expressed her art through making stuff in the house and different things. And when I was a little girl, she'd tell me stories at night and draw me these characters, and they looked just like Disney cartoons.
Wow.
It was amazing. She just ended up being a frustrated housewife in the Bronx, which didn't do any of us any good, especially her. She was always very supportive of my creativity.
That's great. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother. He's into football. He's not really a musician or has a musical bent.
Mm-hmm. So nobody else kind of had that same passion for the arts as you and your mom then in the home?
Right. Well, my grandfather, my father's father, really liked music. One of my father's best friends was a drummer, so he used to come over and we used to talk about music.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter writes songs and sings. My granddaughter is a singer-songwriter. And my grandson is writing hip-hop stuff.
Wow. So there's definitely a creative and musical gene in your family then.
Yeah, I guess so.
You write songs from every genre, basically. Is there like a genre that you tend to lean more toward than another?
I write, it's interesting because a lot of times I consider myself almost a reporter. I see or hear something and I write about it. I write about family situations. So I tend toward, and at this point in my life, I sort of hear the music and the words at the same time. So if I'm writing a song, the music sort of goes with it. Wherever that is, that's where the music goes. I guess sort of folk rock kind mm-hmm. of stuff is what my natural thing is.
Yeah.
I write a lot of ballads, but then like on the new CD that I'm working on, I have a song that's a swing tune because I grew up listening to that and I'd never written anything. I went to a folk club camp out and somebody was singing this song about love at first sight. And I said, well, what about love at second sight? And so the song is called Love at Second Sight and it's a swing tune. So I like exploring different kinds of music. I wrote a song, one of the songs on my CD, which is Will I Dream. It's written because I was listening to a bunch of Irma Thomas music. And I figured, let me try writing something sort of in that genre. And then I liked what I ended up with.
Yeah, it's very good. You mentioned liking the Beatles and the Stones. Who else were some of your early musical heroes?
Well, like in the folk realm, Joni Mitchell, Simon and Garfunkel, James Taylor, and groups like Traffic.
Mm-hmm.
I used to put on a stack of records when I was going to sleep at night and just put them on till I fell asleep and just listen to those over and over and over again. I just loved it. I remember when Paul Simon came out with Sounds of Silence, I had one of those old record players where you could take the arm off, and I must have listened to it like 100 times in a row.
Probably wore it out.
Yeah, I was just amazed by that. And I liked novelty songs, too. I liked the silly stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can hear that there's a sense of humor in a lot of your music, and you don't take yourself too seriously.
my mom listened to a lot of those, I mean, back in the day, they had a lot of novelty songs, and my best friend Marlena and I used to, they had these records where they'd have some kind of a theme and then add songs in from different songs, different songs into the story.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to make those up and put them on a tape recorder. I wish I still had those. I don't know what happened to those. But we used to make up stories and then add in parts of songs to them.
Yeah, like the Spike Jonze stuff.
Right, and they were usually pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. So you are from New York, but now you live in the Bay Area in California. What got you from New York to the Bay Area?
Mostly the weather. I had friends who were out here, so I wasn't coming out here cold. And I was actually out here 72 and 3. And that's when the house burned down, was in 73.
Mm.
And then moved back to New York and did a lot of stuff in New York. I worked when I was living in upstate New York. We did a record album called Save the Mountain. There's this place, Minnewaska, that was in danger of becoming a Marriott Hotel, and now instead it's Minnewaska Lake State Park. That took 8 years of fighting for that. I was active in New York in local things, and that was an environmental issue.
Mm-hmm. And were you always a school teacher during this time?
No. Well, actually what I did was, when I was in New York, I never taught at all. I mostly just played music.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I came out here, I substitute taught for 19 years because I didn't want to take a full-time job. I wanted my flexibility. So I was pretty much working all the time when I was here, but I could take off for 3 weeks and go out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, I found my health insurance going up 3 times the amount in 1 year. And, I'm not going out of town that much. I should take a Maybe I should find something. So I started working in special ed.
Uh-huh.
And I did that until I retired. So now I'm actually on a pension, because in Berkeley schools, they allow the subs to pay into the state retirement system, which is not in every district that they do that.
Mm-hmm.
So because of all the years I subbed, I was able to actually get enough years vested to get a pension. So now I have time to play a lot of music.
Yeah, you can afford to do music.
Right, I can afford to be. I took the full time job so I could afford to be a musician, and then I had to retire because I didn't have time to work.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah,
I noticed a lot of the people I've talked to from the Bay Area there, they kind of got their start, or they were born like on the East Coast, and then they found their way out to California, usually at some point in the 70s. What do you think it is about that draws people from, say, the East Coast to come out to California to make music there and to create art on the West Coast?
Well, I think the first thing that draws you out here is the weather,
mm-hmm.
because you're not freezing all the time. And then there's a really huge community of musicians out here, very supportive people. I'm part of the San Francisco Folk Music Club. In fact, I'm on the board. At this point, the Folk Music Club is old folkies and a lot of old hippies that sing rock and roll when we get together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real mixture of people, and a lot of swing people, a lot of old-timey musicians. And there are really genres for everybody out here. And people are very friendly and inviting, and we have a musical community out here that doesn't just get together and play music. Someone gets sick, we all help them out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very inclusive and caring community.
Yeah.
Which is very appealing to me.
Right. Yeah, it's not just a bunch of musicians who pass in the night, but people who actually love one another and care about one another.
Exactly. And that's very important to me.
Yeah, that's great. You also got to sing backup for Nelson Mandela.
Oh, that was great. When Nelson Mandela came to the Coliseum to perform, he was on a tour with Winnie Mandela. Harry Belafonte was on that tour. Bonnie Raitt was singing that day. There's a local chorus, Vukani Mwetu, who does South African freedom songs, who had been to South Africa a few times, and they were invited to sing the South African national anthem behind Mandela on stage. And talking about crossover with local groups, they also invited Freedom Song Network that I was part of, that a lot of them were part of as well, and La Peña Chorus to join them on stage. So we were able to do that, and we had rehearsals for 6 weeks to learn the national anthem.
Wow.
And what I felt, yeah, because it had no cognates. It wasn't like, it was, Nkosi Sikelele, Africa, and it didn't have any words that meant the same thing in English, you know,
mm-hmm.
or that translated well. So you really had to, I mean, I found myself up at night singing in my sleep. Yeah. What was really interesting with that was they did background checks on all the people who were going to sing in the chorus, because they wanted to make sure that Mandela was safe. So all these progressive people were getting background checks, and it was okay all the stuff you did because they just wanted to make sure Mandela was safe.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah, and there were 38,000 people in the stadium that day, and the feeling was just overwhelming.
Wow.
Yeah, it was one of the highlights of my life.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And how many people were in the chorus?
In the chorus, probably about 60 or so.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Lucani chorus in the front, and then La Peña chorus people and Freedom Song Network, maybe 50 or 60 people.
Wow, that's
yeah.
very cool. I want to start talking about Eclectic Circus a little bit. What number is this in your number of albums?
This is number five.
Five?
Yeah. My first CD, I had made cassettes. And so my first was like best of, and I took all the songs from the different cassettes and put them on a CD when CDs started becoming popular.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did one that was called Gypsy-O that I just did at home. I did, let me see, what else did I do? I have the, I'm trying to think of my albums. I had one that's called I Refuse to Believe that I put out during the Bush era. That's really a very political album.
Mm-hmm.
When I write political songs, I don't write something that people want to just slash their wrists hearing. I try to make them positive. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of my friends who was very political said when she got the album, when she was feeling depressed about what was going on, she put my album on and feel better. That was probably the best review I ever got on that album.
Yeah.
And then I have a kids album that I did with Pat Wynn. It was called Labor of Love, and it was work songs for children, you know, different kinds of things
mm-hmm.
about labor. And I'm not sure if I mentioned all of them now or not.
I think you hit probably most of them. I counted three or four there.
Yeah.
I think
right.
four.
My first attempt at really recording was an LP called My Work Is Play. That was my thing on my card at that time. I just said, My Work Is Play.
what year did you do your first album?
The compilation thing, let's see, the LP I did in 88.
Because
I remember my granddaughter was just born, and I was getting all the boxes of albums. My daughter was living in an apartment right underneath me in this apartment building. And I'm carrying the albums up, and she's going, well, you know, why don't you just, like, act like a grandma? Why don't you just sit around and knit? You know, she was teasing me. And I say, well, I didn't have this kid. Don't tell me, you know. you're the one baby grandma. I'm just myself.
Exactly. So you're trying to shine. So you must have seen a big change in the way music is recorded and over the last almost 30 years now.
Oh, yeah.
How does this newest album, Eclectic Circus, compare to that first album and recording it?
Well, the first album we did on, I think, 2-inch tape at a studio here in Oakland. And if you wanted to change anything, you had to actually splice the tape
mm-hmm.
and, you know, take a cutter and make a diagonal cut and put things together. And then I went from that to ADAT. I recorded a couple of things on ADAT machines, which were really good quality. But it was, you know, it was digital, but it was also sort of in between. And then this last album that I made, I actually did it on computer from my house, but it wasn't just on the computer. My friend John Cook, who's an excellent sound person, he has, you know, I got the Cakewalk program because he had the same kind of program so we could sync up.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of the post-production with him, and he just knew how to sweeten everything.
Yeah.
And I've run into people, and they can't believe the quality that we got doing it not in a regular studio, but on the computer.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do nowadays, you know.
Yeah,
It's incredible. So I want to ask you about a couple of the songs on the CD. Tell me what, not that there's not a lot of inspiration for the song, but what was the specific inspiration for In a World Gone Mad?
Okay, In a World Gone Mad, I was thinking about all the stuff in the world, and the main thing was I wanted to write something about the people who really made everything tolerable. So the chorus goes, in a world gone mad, I'm glad that there are people like you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really an homage to the people that I know. And for every four lines of things in the song that were wrong with the world, there were eight lines of things that were right.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very careful, you know, like I really thought carefully about, well, there's this and there's that, but look at what else there is. And the reason that there is the good stuff is because all the decent people in, you know, who work to make it that way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm constantly telling myself, you know, for every bad thing I see, there's, you know, probably 100 good things that's going on. You know,
right,
you kind of get inundated with, you know, the media and social media telling you about all this horrible stuff going on. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I look at my neighbors and I'm thinking, well, they're a really good person, you know. It's like,
right, and you know, anywhere you go in the world, you always meet more decent people than not.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of traveling, and everywhere you go, people basically want the same things. They want good stuff for their family. They want to be able to relax. They want to be able to provide for their family. They want their community to be safe and healthy. And they are, and everywhere I've gone, people are so welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like to like other people.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there are always exceptions, but the majority of people are really decent.
Yeah. That's why I always feel that love will always conquer hate. You know?
Yeah.
I really believe that. I was going to ask you about another song that I like a lot, too, on the CD called Angels Without Wings.
That's about my granddaughters. And what happened was my daughter was in between houses, and I took the girls. They were like 6 and 10 years old, 6 and 11, and they came and lived with me for a while. And I used to tell them stories at night, or I'd put them to bed and we'd talk. And I wrote the song about them. And I came in and I said, I have a song for you. And I played the song. And Khadijah, who was 6 at the time, I finished the song and she looked at me and she went, "Play it again, Grandma."
Uh-huh.
And, you know, but it's about them. And it was all true stuff. You know, it's kids are resilient and wonderful, and you know, and you see all the good things in the world in kids.
Right. Yep. Yeah. The kids don't know about hate. And it's like the funny story I always tell about my son is that we were on a playground one time and he was playing with a kid, and he comes up and he goes, "Hey, Mom, I'm going to go play with that black kid over there." And I'm like, "What, Nikolai? Why would you say that?" And he goes, "The kid that's dressed in black over there. I'm going to go play with him." And I'm like, "Okay, that's fine." You know, I'm like,
yeah.
Whoa, you know, you just blew my mind. So,
well, you know, I used to tell my kids, I say, don't look at what skin color people have or what they absolutely look in their eyes and see what comes back at you. And that's how you can tell what a person
yeah.
is.
Yeah. I mean, kids just don't see that. They just see the other kid and see how they're treating them or see that they're playing with them or not. You know, they don't see skin color. And
No, not unless they're
taught
that way. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, do you have a favorite cut from the CD?
Well, that's kind of hard to tell because you know I worked. Will I Dream? I was my big production number, and I really enjoyed doing that one because it was different than my usual stuff. I liked the last cut, which is Married Missionary, is a true story.
Mm.
The reason I liked that was because I got a lot of humor into the song, and it was rock and roll.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first song, In a World Gone Mad, I had two of my granddaughters and my daughter singing on it. In fact, at the end where I do this big, like, death can't sing and stuff, that's my daughter and my granddaughter singing with me.
Very cool.
So I like that because they're involved in it. Every Time That I'm With You is written about my partner, Randy, who also played all the lead guitar parts on the CD.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a love song, and I like love songs, too.
Mm-hmm. You were mentioning earlier that you were working on a new CD.
Yeah.
When is that going to be done? And
maybe, you know, I figure within a year. I'm not rushing it. I have, you know, people who are going to be playing other things on it as well. It's going to be, I know what it's going to be called, Days of My Life, because I have a song called Days of My Life, and I'm going to use that as the title song in the first song on the CD. And it'll probably have like 14 songs or so.
Mm-hmm.
I figure after I do this, because what happened was I hadn't recorded anything for a while, and I had this backlog of songs, and I sort of made it into two groups and put out Eclectic Circus first. And then I have this other one. And once those are done, then I can just record one song at a time and take it easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I get enough, I could do another CD.
Yeah. Or you can just release them one at a time. I mean, that's what a lot of people are doing nowadays.
These days, everything is, you get, ooh, I got a penny for that song. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Don't spend it all in one place.
Yeah, right.
I want to ask you one more question about, are there any political or social issues that you are going to be tackling in the next few months with this being the political year and the election coming up? And
well, let's see. I think the one of the big issues is climate and Occupy. See, I do a lot of my political work with Occupella, and we go out and sing for rallies and things. We've had several really big climate change rallies.
Do you get asked by, like, Bernie Sanders or Hillary or any of those guys to come and play in any of their rallies? Or?
Bernie Sanders, yes, because we have a lot of local people who are for Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sort of biding my time to see what happens. I'm working for Bernie. In fact, we put out a video of a song that Nancy Schimmel wrote. It's up on YouTube called The Bernie Sanders Train to the Wabash Cannonball.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that out. And the Resisters sang a song that someone else had written called Mr. Sanders to Mr. Sandman.
Uh-huh.
And I'll probably, you know, like, I'm waiting to see what happens in the primaries before I really... I would love to see Bernie get far. I also don't have any problem with Hillary.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the way a lot of us liberals are feeling.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. One thing I do know is I don't want to see Donald Trump or Ted Cruz in the White House.
Right. Yeah, either one of them, both of them are, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, no. It seems like the debates and everything else have gone on so long, I'm just sick of it already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this political season has been going way too long.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you're one of those voices that are not afraid to speak out, and you're there to make people aware of social and political issues in this country. Because I think a lot of musicians, they don't like to step into that kind of territory. They're afraid of, I don't know, losing fans, or I don't know what it is.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the fans I have like what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And now that I'm retired, if I'm not making any money, hey, I'm not making any money around music anyway.
Yeah. But you're staying true to yourself. That's the important thing.
Yeah, I've never been very good at not expressing myself.
Mm-hmm.
My mother especially, she always used to say, don't say anything behind someone's back, you won't say to their face. And she was very candid about things. My dad was probably the most honest person I ever met, and he was very frank. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. whether you liked what he said or not, you knew it was true for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was his truth.
But I grew up in a family that wasn't exactly shy and retiring about what they believed.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, I want to let everybody know that they can find your music at CD Baby or at iTunes. And they can also go to your website, which is halliehammer.com, HalliHammer. Like I said, CD Baby and iTunes as well. And then people can find some videos on YouTube as well, correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you again, Hallie, for taking the time
to
speak with me. We'll be in touch soon again.
Okay. Thanks a lot.